Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show on the Voice of Vachon, located on beautiful Vachon Island, rising majestically above the waters of the Puget Sound between Seattle and Tacoma in the state of Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. And Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto was less is more, more or less, and he always offered more. All right, and our panel today, which will strive to offer you more, currently includes our big board pilot and real-life pilot, morning DJ and reformed Texan, Truman O'Brien.
All right, I'm not so sure about the reformed part.
And we also have Legal Beagle, consensus builder, former Pinkerton guard, and Fulbright scholar Craig Bellis.
Good morning, all.
Good morning. And I think that our avid defender of justice, Mariner cyclist, and top secret engineer Kevin Jones might be joining us a little later in the show. And absent today, by virtue of being an awesome husband, is historian, professor, party animal, and down under aficionado Bruce Holman. And I am Amy Dreher, sometimes known as a politico, always known as a shenanigans coordinator. And our guest today is Gib Damon, who, unlike me, has curated a collection of political memorabilia that is both interesting and educational. Good morning, Gib.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Good to be here.
Welcome. All right. So before we check in, as we do, we're going to take a moment to talk about what special things we've experienced in this past week. And Truman, anything good?
Oh, it's been pretty slow week for me. I was able to get rid of some of my compost, which I was most happy about. That's a big moment in my my month, if I can get that done. I have to.
Is that figuratively or literally?
Literally. Yes. Hey, I see Kevin Jones is just now logging in with us here. There he is.
Zooming in.
So let me make sure that we've got him on the board. Good morning, Kevin. Are you there?
Good morning. I've zoomed. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we got you.
Awesome. Good to be here.
You missed the introductions, but she did give you a very glowing report of who you
Should
are.
Should I weigh in on how my week has gone?
Well, that'll be... well.
I think so.
Sure, right now.
Let's do that. We will move from compost to Kevin.
All right. So you have to bring me up to speed here. So, hey, I cross paths with another briefly. Has Craig talked about the coup yet?
No. Ooh. No, not yet.
Well, that was like a highlight of my week for sure. I know Craig was instrumental, I think, in convincing the good folks at the coup that it was time for John Prine night. I know Steve said he's been waiting to do this for a long time. So I was really happy to see a bunch of people at the coup enjoying so many John Prine songs. It was really very awesome. Other than that, I just got off the water, so a little bit delayed in getting the boat into the boathouse. But spectacular morning. The water is flat as a plate of glass. Some new rowers out to enjoying a tremendous opportunity to get out in around Vachon. So that's where I've been.
You know, I forgot to mention a very, very important thing that I did this week. I knew there was something in the back of my mind there. I went to see the story of Edgar Sawtelle at VCA. I'm telling you that this is the last weekend, I believe, coming up. If you haven't seen it, I highly, highly recommend you go. It's not exactly light fare, mind you. It's a pretty heavy-duty story. But, boy, I'm telling you, the writing is absolutely brilliant. The acting is excellent. The staging is perfect. They'll have a little musical background. Everything was absolutely perfect. I highly recommend it. So there you go.
Right on, right on. Yeah, I think that's on my docket for this week. And last week I was fortunate by matter of my Politico work to go to the Fairies Conference.
Oh, yeah.
If you didn't know, there is a conference in Seattle all about fairies.
We're talking F-E-R-R-Y, not...
the transportation type?
Yes, the transportation. Okay. I think there are probably other fairy conferences in the world, many of them. Yeah, so anyway, this one is held by a guy who's been doing it for about 30 years and, you know, kind of not everyone who's anyone, but mostly anyone who's anyone in the fairy world came. They had folks from San Francisco, from, you know, they have a big operation down there, and they had folks from North Carolina, right? They run ferries on the Outer Banks, and you know, passenger only is the wave of the future, man. Mm-hmm. That was the hot topic for sure. Obviously, electrification of both foot ferries and car ferries was a big topic, but man, are we talking about transit on our marine highways? Mm-hmm. So that was really great to make some connections there, and they did get a little wonky. They got deep into ferry operations and talked about some cool stuff. We saw some cool videos about the hydrofoils foot ferries that they are already running over in Europe, of course, a little bit ahead of us. And that hydrofoil technology is what Kitsap County got a large grant to study, not study, but I think to explore just this past couple months. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next 10 years on the Puget Sound. But I think we might see a lot more small, efficient boat traffic moving people from place to place. So that was a real highlight. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Amy, I'm glad you clarified the topic, because my niece is like texting me about where's the they have unicorns and fairies. So I'm glad we cleared that up.
Uh-huh. Yes. No, this is a much more mundane, but if you're a little bit of a fairy wonk, as I've come to be, it was a very exciting conference.
The whole hydrofoil thing is exciting to me. That, boy, those things are fast and they don't produce any wake. I mean, what a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are pretty cool, and they are sailing over in the North Sea. And but I think King County Marine is not yet convinced that it can handle all of the flotsam in the Puget Sound.
Oh, that's true.
That is the issue, and that was the issue. I think I mentioned this several shows ago. I sat on an airplane, I think flying down to San Francisco or something, and the head Boeing engineer on the on that project, the hydrofoil project, was sitting next to me, and I said, I said it's too bad that the hydrofoil project didn't work out here in Puget Sound, and he said, well, it would have, except we were testing these hydrofoils off the coast of Brazil, and they would continually hit these giant manta rays and shear off one of the wings in the water. Mm. Which is not a good thing. So when you say the flotsam, that is an issue. You hit a deadhead, log floating out there. That is a bit of a problem, to say the least.
Yeah, to say the least. If not an orca, right?
Right.
The first time that happens, man, that's a lot of.
Oh yeah.
That's a lot of problems.
Right.
We got problems, but regardless, hydrofoil or not, there are some cool electrification technologies coming down the line and efficiencies. So exciting to see the future.
Well,
of ferries,
while we're digressing, Gib will be in a second.
But Mr. Jones is on the screen. He'd like to add something here.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, I'll just throw in, we actually did a little research on the King County Water Taxi. There's a part of their website that talks about environmental concerns. And so, Amy, you mentioned hydrogen or electrification. I think they're also looking at hydrogen. Mm-hmm. We were keenly interested in hydrofoils because the efficiency improvement is so huge when you go to hydrofoils. Mm-hmm. So I think that, in my personal opinion, I think all of those things should continue to be part of the conversation as we try to address the climate challenge that represents by water transit that we're very reliant on.
Agreed. But as long as it doesn't provide an excuse to postpone doing legitimate things. You know, it was really great last week to see that there were multiple bids available for the electrification of ferries. It's time to build one or five, and let the technology itself move on. I think we can take a look at our history, and we see the electric car as being postponed for a long time, and before that, the solar module, and on and on and on. At a certain point in time, it really pays off to go for it.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the thing that I really got excited about was Toyota's new little hydrogen cylinders. Have you seen that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that just sounds like the answer. If you can pull into a service station, plug in one of those things, and recharge your fuel cell, and off you go. Man, that just sounds like the way to go to me. Exciting stuff.
I was just going to add real quick that in Sydney, you know, for the last 30, 40 years, they have a multiple passenger ferry setup where I think there's 8 slots where they just pull right in. Mm-hmm. And that people get off in the front and the back and these wide, you know, things. You can get on and off of those things in an instant. You get back on them and you're off to points, in the bay there. It's really quite efficient and extraordinary the way that works. And it's worked that way for decades.
Yeah. It's not that it's not happening. It's just not happening.
That's right.
Yes.
Kevin's got
It kind of ties into what's been happening last week and certainly this year. The new ferry terminal in Seattle is really happening. That's such progress, and it was, once again, so long overdue. But it was great to pick up the passenger ferries mid-morning and run in and see a baseball game or head to the University of Washington. We've been doing so many things in the daytime because of that added convenience, and the ferry terminal is just great to exchange through.
Mm-hmm. It is, and it possibly a greatly held secret that the restrooms in the new Coleman Dock terminal are still very nice. Just heads up if you need a restroom in downtown Seattle.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. So wait, Craig, what awesome thing has happened to you this week?
Just a little tiny bit. Kevin mentioned the coupe, and the coupe was spectacular. Steve Amston and Chris Anderson again knocked it out of the park. The place was packed. John Prine songs, many people are very familiar with them, but if you're not, I mean, they are heartfelt, wonderful stories, every single one of them, and I have to thank Steve for putting that on. The other thing was working on my hardwood floor in my living room, the trestle.
Didn't you just do that?
No, that was another part. Part of our hardwood floor.
Oh, okay.
This is the one that's made out of reclaimed trestle wood, and bridges and barns and whatnot. And occasionally, it's got to be fixed up, and so that's what I was doing. But that's about it. There's lots of other chores around the house.
Mm-hmm. Getting ready for winter.
Yep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Gib, what about you? Anything special this week?
Well. Lots moving on in work and personal life, but I'd like to change this over to a segue and make this a political paradox here. And his name is Elon Musk, who obviously has been large, whether we like it or not, in politics. But he's also, you know, picking used spaceships out chopsticks.
Yeah. Wasn't that something? The video of that was just mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The comments afterwards were mind-boggling, too. Mm. The people who, that's all AI. That's not real.
Okay,
that's
not, come on.
They come out of the woodwork.
Boy. Yes, yes.
So that's it.
That's it. That's a pretty good roundup. All right. So today is a significant day, as are all days. We are 16 days until the high holy holiday of Vashon, which is Halloween, uptown. And if you don't have your costume ready, get on it. You know you're going to see some good ones. We are 21 days until the presidential election on November 5th. And we are 97 days until the inauguration of the 47th president of the United States. All right. So Today in History. Get a little plug in here. 1 year from now, we're going to go Today in the Future. We are hoping that people will have forgotten our very memorable appearance of the Brown Briefly tonight at the Voice of Vashon's The Voice fundraiser, which starts at 7 p.m. at the theater. And in addition to seeing the Brieflys up on stage doing what we call choreography, you will see many, many talented Islanders up there singing their hearts out and raising money for the Voice of Vashon. So come on up tonight, 7 o'clock at the Vashon Theater for the Voice fundraiser for the Voice of Vashon. All right. Also, 1973, apropos of tonight's Voice of Vashon fundraiser, 1973, Dolly Parton dropped Jolene, legendary, legendary song, legendary record. Today in 1991, the husband of treasonous conspiracy theorist Ginny Thomas, this man is a known sexual harasser, legal lightweight, and Scalia sycophant. Clarence Thomas was appointed to the United States Supreme Court today in 1991. On a better note, on this day in 1951, the first episode of I Love Lucy aired. And on this day in 1844, classical scholar and philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, one of the most influential of all modern thinkers, if we will give him that honorific, was born in Prussia. And if not for him, we would not have one of the only jokes I am able to remember, which probably many of you will be able to say with me. Am I correct? Right?
Yes.
Right? Right? Nietzsche, God is dead. God? Nietzsche is dead. Right? I know. I got to keep them simple. I'm not good with the jokes, but when I got them, I got them. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to our small talk. And today we welcome Gib Damon, the man behind the incredible collection of Americana and political memorabilia now on display at the Heritage Museum. And it is not just a collection. It's also very informative. It includes a timeline of how Vashon voted in the presidential elections compared to how the rest of America voted. And that is very interesting. I won't drop any spoilers, but it is fascinating to see sort of the political culture of Vashon and how it moved through history. All right. But I think first we need to learn a little more.
Right. We do. We have the statutory first question, typically. And it's... Gib, you got to tell us a little bit about yourself, how you ended up on Vashon, and what you're up to today outside of the work and the collection that you have at the Vashon Museum.
Ended up on Vashon looking for some place to move out of Seattle, looking for a smaller community. My wife and I arrived in, I believe it was 2001. For the first time to check out some real estate. And I noticed that there's every fourth car has a bumper sticker on it saying impeach George Bush. And I look at my wife and I say, honey, we've found our people. This is our tribe. We're home. practicing architecture on the island and semi-retired, which is even more fun because I'm not having to chase ambulances. I can pick and choose. And so I have some great clients and love this burg.
It's not a bad spot.
I'm telling you, will you finish, Greg?
Yeah. Well, no, I was just, that's fine. What do you do? Well, you explain that. But I wanted to ask you, when you say you're semi-retired architect, what kinds of stuff do you do?
All residential at this point.
Okay.
And mostly new homes on the island. I used to do a fair amount of work all around the U.S., my home state of Virginia, Park City, Utah. It's interesting what the profession, where it will take you.
Park City, I bet you had to... You designed some pretty fancy houses.
No, I designed a nice, more than a starter home for my niece.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Oh, nice.
That's great. Okay.
So I have to tell you, I was knocked out by your collection. I mean, just That is just fantastic. But I'm really curious, how in the world did you get started? I mean, did you just like the first one you got and decided to hang on to it? Or how'd that all happen? How'd it come about?
True story. I discovered that if I, at the age of seven, if I stood on my parents' bed, I could reach the top of my father's dresser and start. I started collecting Stevenson and Kennedy buttons off of his dresser, and he figured it out pretty early. So then he and my mother started leaving stuff up there to add to the collection. I think I was really fascinated in the bling, frankly. And the bling had really started at that point in time. Yeah. Eisenhower's, Ike's diamond earrings and necklaces and brooches and on and on and on. It really started to get out of just the button realm and into not just bumper stickers, but into more varied political memorabilia. And sure enough. Growing up in music, getting thrown into situations that were related to protests of the Vietnam War, the age of psychedelia. I was a big Hendrix fan, and growing up close enough to Washington D.C. that at the age of 17, I would go up to in a van with the boys, and we'd play a major protest at rally, DuPont and something. So it was impossible to get away from at a very early age. And also growing up in the South, really difficult, fascinating times. Best of times, worst of times. Yeah. My hometown city of Charlottesville was denying that racial card when I was 10 and 11. The school system of Virginia shut down. The whole Virginia public school system shut down rather than integrate. So wow. My older brother and sister had to go to private school until we reopened. There are these benchmarks, including even before that, my father took me to see the I Have a Dream speech. Wow. I was there at the age of nine. So I used that proximity to D.C. a whole lot. My family were assistant attorney general and lawyers for the Justice Department and designing radar systems for the Patriot missile system, all in the D.C. area. So it was very much a big part of my life. I also discovered in playing music all over the place that, you know, you do a sound check at 4 o'clock between 5 and 9, you don't have anything to do, so you go have dinner and you go check out an antique store. And you know, you're exposed to Scranton and Rockefeller memorabilia in Pittsburgh, and then, you know, different in Asheville, North Carolina, so I just kept, you know, paying $3-5 for a unit and put it into my pocket. And then eBay comes along, and I've been in a lot of trouble ever since.
I'm curious, in those antique stores and those pawn shops or whatever, do you have any other kinds of collections?
No. My mother, very early on, tried to get me into matchbooks. No. I found... There were already political memorabilia clubs, and they would often join them for $30, and they'd send you a glossy book of pretty much an encyclopedia of what was out there. So I was extremely hooked from early on. Yeah.
So just a quick question. Do you have other things that are not in the collection at the museum?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
there is a display case at Chautauqua in the library, which is going on simultaneously. And I've got a whole lot of stuff at home. So the stuff that's out there is maybe a third of of the collection.
Wow.
It's been great to actually show this stuff that, you know, been hanging out in your garage for way too long. Mm-hmm. And it's allowed you to focus what is political memorabilia. And it can be a pretty broad category. And indeed, we had a Zoom the other night at the Heritage Museum, and had a couple of political scientists, and they weighed in. They did some research, and they realized that there was very little of that historic thread, memorabilia-wise, that could be traced.
Hmm.
And I had always found that there's a university in Rhode Island that's got quite an extensive collection. There's the School of Political Science at UVA that's got a little bit of one. The Smithsonian's just started to collect as of the last 4 years. But the collections are few and far between. And it's interesting to track the media. We all understand that we started out with the written word. And we can think of Thomas Paine and Patrick Henry and the Declaration of Independence. How many times has that been printed up? moving on from that, then we had pictures to go with. And that was what I like to recall is that it seemed like the Civil War was all of a sudden illustrative, and people realized how bad war is. And so that picture complemented that written word. And then we learned how to add color and pictures to tin stamping and combine that with ribbons of inaugurations, etc. For quite a while, that was the media. Until radio and especially television comes along, and then all of a sudden, you're reciting. You know, it was Dick Nixon's makeup artist that sabotaged his first election against Kennedy, and so those one-liners are starting to come out of debates, indeed we see that. Today, but it's added with the video and YouTube and magnified extremely. And it's unbelievable that a candidate that in, 7 weeks of running time can raise $1 billion. And where is that going? That's going into the 30-second soundbite.
Wow.
Yeah, Kevin.
So, hey, Gib, I did have a chance to stop by at the museum and admire the portion of your collection there. It's a lot of $2 bills with candidates' faces on that. I thought that was kind of fascinating. I'm curious, given the whole breadth and depth and expanse of political memorabilia, is there any place that you focus in particular? Is there how do you decide where to focus your collection efforts? And where do you go shopping for this stuff?
Well, for the longest time, it was buttons. For decades and decades, it was buttons. And then about 10 years ago, I realized that I needed to branch out. and so I've been looking for other things, an Eisenhower umbrella is one of my faves. It actually works. Clothing. Because often that hits the nail on the head. I wore a T-shirt the other night that was in reference to George W. Bush, and it's Chris Anderson actually gave it to me as his contribution. But it says somewhere in Texas there is a village that's missing its idiot.
Yeah.
And you know, that was pretty poignant stuff. But there's a lot of those. There's also the caricatures. You know, there's the Ford being the car. There's the Carter being the peanut. So kind of looking, branching out, and just lately, Kevin, I've realized that I need to send my international emissaries out and ask them to take pictures of internationally what's happening, or steal a flyer if they feel so to choose. So I'm expanding that international side. It's just, you know, just started that up a couple years ago, but we have. I have an English daughter living in London, and she's provided lots of good fodder lately. Right on top of Brexit.
Now, is this the political stuff from there, or is this political stuff from reflects what the U.S. is?
From there.
From there, okay.
Yeah. So please, if you find yourself on a bike ride hitting the flatlands of Germany, and you see just take that glossy photo and send it to giveD@comcast.net.
Nice. Yeah.
Just a quick interjection, Kevin. It's funny. I was just looking at Amy's sweatshirt that has Return of the Sockeye on it. This morning on the morning news, there was a commentator, a talking head, an analyst, and behind her she had a poster, which I had never seen. It was a Yoda and Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. Darth Vader was holding up an elephant. And Yoda was holding up a jackass. And it was just beautifully done. So the opportunity for imagination, creativity there is endless, is it not?
It is. It is. And ultimately, it really comes down to the one-liner. Mm-hmm. So much the 30-second bite that we still managed to focus around to this day. The amount of cat lady stuff, just for instance, is just, I've spent a half an hour getting cat lady stuff. another interesting part of the collection that I'm developing is around issues. I have always collected a lot around race, lately, thanks to Hillary, started collecting gender and international, as we mentioned, labor, war. There are so many issues, themes out there that just keep coming back.
It's interesting intersection with pop culture. I mean, you really can. And when you look at, you know, the collection at the Heritage Museum goes back to, I think, the 20s, right? Mm-hmm. About the 20s. Mm-hmm. And in a way that is so visceral when you see these actual tangible artifacts and you know, even the fonts that they were using and what they thought was humorous or stylish at the time. It's such a tangible way to be with, you know, that time period more so, I think, sometimes than just looking at general photographs or reading a history, right? You kind of see what was the pop culture of the time, what got folks laughing, right? What would folks wear to make their point? So with that said, though, I'd love if you could kind of walk the folks through the visuals of what's going on at the Heritage Museum, that they can, you know, kind of give us a general sense of what is the exhibit that we're talking about here.
I'll give that a shot, but kind of in response to your point, that culture is reflected in the collection. There's a picture of Elvis Presley and Dick Nixon. And I'm sure that Elvis's endorsement was not something to be laughed at. There's a picture of Donald Trump hanging out with Kid Rock.
That can be laughed at. Just by the way.
And you know, the whole Taylor Swift boating thing is just, you know, as fresh as it could be. It constantly revolves around that pulp culture, and also that technological revolution that is associated with. Back to YouTube. Yeah, to walk through the collection, one thing it does not have is it doesn't have much paper. And I finally got around to consolidating paper. So if you want to see the paper, I've got four heavy portfolios that one's full of newspapers, primarily of Jack Kennedy's assassination, because that seems to be what a lot of folks were collecting, and they end up in estate sales. Thank you, Mike and Catherine Urban. Mm-hmm. Bumper stickers, a whole portfolio of bumper stickers, which, interestingly enough, has really fallen out of practice. 10 years ago, it was you know, expected. If you were adamant about a politician, you had a bumper sticker.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
These days.
Yeah, get shot. You know?
That's true. That's very true.
Just a quick question. Talking about the collection, are you thinking about refreshing the collection as time goes on? I mean, changing it, or is it going to be static the way it is, or...
Yes, the Heritage Museum has a key, and I know that they want to feature bobbleheads as a special table, and that's a pretty good collection. Once again, utilizing friends and family, my daughter lives down in Los Angeles, and she calls me on a Sunday, and she said, "Dad, you would not believe all of this cool warehouses of bobbleheads." And man, she got some good ones. She sent me, I think she got me close to 40 bobbleheads.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Bless her heart. I'm hoping they might also use the paper to supplement and show. Walking through the exhibit, it's done chronologically, and you mentioned the timeline that Bruce put together and Jenna Riggs, and it's really interesting to see that in parallel, because the objects above it generally represent that culture, that time, as you say, it's also interesting to basically see the flip of Vashon politics, which was very much a 60s and 70s thing, to go from very, very staunch conservative to liberal and damn proud of it in a span of basically a decade. So check that out as you're, and check into the timeline as you look at the objects.
One thing that struck me is that looking at the timeline, you'll see blue, 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 and then boom, a red, and then blue, blue, or vice versa. And it's like, well, what happened in that year that flipped the island, you know, one way or the other? And it's interesting. I think your memorabilia supplements or adds to that, you know, like, oh, okay, that's what was going on. You know, I find that really fascinating.
And that's another interesting thing that one of the political scientists bought up in the Zoom the other night. She did some research into colors, because we realized that we were standard red, white, and blue up to a certain point in time. And she said it was decided in 2000 election by three network simultaneously that Republicans were going to be red and Democrats were going to be blue. Hmm. And at that point in time, then that's literally when the color was tied in is 2000, is as late as 2000.
Yeah, I remember that because, you know, they were looking for a way during that whole, during the upheaval, right, to just distinguish for the Electoral College, right, to be very, very clear during this, you know, tied kind of thing, right, to visually represent who was who and what mattered. And I remember that. That was a visually striking moment, but just sort of one of those random pop culture things that sort of changed our entire vernacular, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it really
definitely.
Did. It really
definitely.
Did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Walking through finishing up the discussion, please, when you're there, look at themes, or look at the subtle media themes that are going through. There are signature pins. There are matchbooks. It's amazing how many matchbooks are out there from Air Force One, just for instance, and stationery. There are obviously photos and photos of celebs. There are watches. There are 6 Spiro Agnew watches out there. I've got 4 of them, but they just keep coming back. I've got a Trump watch. I've got a Hillary watch.
Wow.
So it's fun to see those recurrences. Bobbleheads, for instance.
Yeah. I don't endorse the message, but I do love the John Kerry flip-flops.
There you go. Yeah.
Right. Clever. Yeah. Yeah. Clever. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Kevin?
Well, Gib, you mentioned a couple of the changes you've seen, like the color discrimination between, you know, Democrats and Republicans. Are there any other general themes that you want to make, that you've seen in your collecting? And I don't know, are you thinking there might be some future collectible opportunities that the political parties haven't yet latched onto?
Great question. Tough question. Yes, I think I think the blues need to latch on to the clothing side,
I don't know, man. I know. I just don't know that American flag briefs are for me. I just I don't know if we're gonna take on that clothing side. Although, you know, I luckily enough have been to a national convention, and I will say the clothing. You know, I think I see the blues dress up for an occasion. More right for like the convention or something like that, right? The big hats and the this and that, but just it seems a little less culturally blue to sort of go all out in your costuming. I just saw from the Trump rally in Colorado, right? Like, you know, they did a little photojournalism on it, and you know, just the all out American flag sort of costuming. Was really interesting to see. And I don't know if I see that culturally from the blue side of things. It's interesting.
Well,
it's a good point.
Yeah. I find that, I don't know, maybe it's my veteran background or whatever, but I get a little bit upset with all the American flag clothing. That kind of bugs me. It's like, you know, we should venerate that, respect that flag and not denigrate it by sticking it all over our clothing. I get a little upset about that. So anyway, that's my personal bias.
I'm not seeing any camo hats around.
Well, you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
I'm wearing one right now. What are you saying?
It's working well, obviously. It's like the private the sergeant comes up to him and says, "I didn't see you at camo practice today." And he said, "Thank you, sir."
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Do you have any favorites in the collection there?
Yes. Too many favorites. The first pictures I have are old. Blown up, grainy Lincoln pictures. And you can really see the weight on that man's shoulders. Mm-hmm. Also, with there's some pictures of his family. A theme that I'm finding fascinating, but it's really hard to find all the possibilities out there, and they are numerous. There's a photo of Dwight Eisenhower, or it's actually a caricature of Dwight Eisenhower in kind of a Last Supper format with obvious cabinet members behind him. Nixon picked that up as indeed the Last Supper, and I have that. It's a black and white, and Ehrlichman and Haldeman and Mitchell and Mrs. Mitchell and on and on and on. All of those characters are the 12 apostles behind trying to make Dick feel good. Wow. Lately, Donald Trump's done it at the weight. I'm hoping to develop that. I'd love to get the Eisenhower one. I've heard rumor that they weren't necessarily the first, that his wasn't the first, but that's the first that I have documented. I love them all, though. I think the value of the collection is numerous. Pictures or artifacts of Carter. Because when you hit that president, we all were the age where we have this flood of memories. Where were we? Mm-hmm. Who were we at the time? That's the value.
So do you have a list of things that you're looking for in particular, or do they just happen to come up and grabs your fancy, or?
Yeah, I would love to get older, pretty much tin stamped or wooden medallia, but they tend to be outpriced. Fortunately, I didn't discover for a long time the truly collectible section of eBay. But you know, there are some really beautiful things out there, but it's $200 and up. Wow. And indeed I saw a really good Lincoln pen, which I had not really thought existed. But that was $1,200 bucks. So
is there counterfeit stuff? I would assume
there was, and it was rampant when I was in my 20s. And it was really a challenge to, they seem to have had on the back the stamp as to where they were produced. But I've thrown out a whole lot of buttons just looking for the real ones. Yeah. Mm. Interestingly enough, there is a button producer in Gig Harbor. Oh. Apparently they've been doing it for a long time, like 40 years plus. And apparently they're still using the original stamp machine that they got in like the 50s. Wow. So, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. You've been at this how many years? Since you were 7, did you say? About 20 years? Well, if it was Stevenson and Kennedy, it probably was a little longer than that, I guess.
Yeah, I think the Stevenson was old, truth be told.
But you have a lot of experience with this. These collectibles and the swag and all of these campaign bits of memorabilia, and they've range. Boy, you've gone over a wide range of the type of things that was utilized. Have you come up with any kind of theory as to whether or not certain sorts of campaign material is more successful for the? The politicians who are utilizing it and running for office?
Yeah, please don't say it's a MAGA hat.
You know, if it's volume, know, as to what's been printed up. The MAGA hat has been very successful. Good question. Not really. You know, that it's kind of interesting that the American flag on your lapel was so strong for so many decades,
right.
And continues to be. But that, I think, would replace the what's her name? Dixie Rose Lee.
Dixie Lee Ray.
Dixie Rose Lee.
Thank you.
No.
And the Scoop Jackson.
Right.
Right. Scoop would be wearing an American flag.
Yeah.
So, no, I think that may change because the speed of the media, including political memorabilia, and the speed of that culture around it is increasing so infinitely fast that a week after Trump's first assassination attempt, I got a shot glass with a embedded bullet in it.
Whoa.
A week after.
Wow.
And we already talked about the cat lady thing. So...
Yeah, it would be an interesting sociological cultural study about the use of these and the success. You would hope that the swag and the branding isn't going to be the ultimate influencer in terms of who gets elected, but we do live in a culture where the medium is the message. It seems more and more all the time.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we've already forgotten, I think, some of those big punch moments, right? Just like the cycle is so quick, right? And the memes on the internet are so, instant. They come and they go, and now they've been replaced by, you know, a shiny baby hippo in Thailand, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know,
right.
That's right. That the politics is out of the news cycle because we have Mudang now.
And that the ability to concentrate on the issues, you know, My issue is climate change. My issue is zero waste Vashon and what I can do towards that. And when Donald Trump stands in front of car makers and oil producers and says, "You give me $1 billion and I will ban auto sales," okay? We totally lost that, right? That issue was lost 2 months ago. Now he's got the biggest electric car manufacturer in the world backing him. How do you keep up with it?
Right.
I mean, I think to a certain extent, to a big extent, it's Trump, frankly, because it's all about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out there to prove he can say anything, and he's not going to lose his constituency. So far, seems to be true.
We've strayed into the authoritarianism series that is still going on this Thursday night. In fact, at the O Space, they've got another lecture in the authoritarianism series. But yes, indeed, the sort of strongman who says what he wants and does what he wants and has monetized swag. I don't know.
Yes.
Do you know? Has there ever been sort of obviously campaign swag is a minor piece of the fundraising game for a campaign. But have you ever seen presidential or whatever level of campaigning where they have, you know, sort of had officially licensed gear the way that Trump has been doing?
No, not based around the individual, and he's been doing that since 2015 successfully on the political front. We were talking about this the other day, and I think that the conclusion was that you become a Democratic candidate, and your name is incorporated around the Democratic Party, your name is incorporated around the Labor Party. And if Kamala doesn't win, then we'll move on to incorporating the next candidate. This is the first that I've ever seen of building on wins and losses and protests and
the personal brand.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so, is there an end date to this exhibit? It's at the Heritage Museum, which is open Wednesday through Sunday, 1 to 4. And is there a time frame? Have we got to rush on down?
Yeah, it will be happening until February 1st. I think that the Heritage Museum, I think we're going to do a couple of things after the election, like in January, when the smoke is cleared, and we'll have fun assessing what worked, what didn't.
Yeah, yeah. The smoke is cleared. Gave me a little January 6th shivers there with the inauguration coming up. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Yes. Yeah. All right. Any.
Oh, that reminds or just strike something. Is there anything in the memorabilia about January 6th? Do you have anything that commemorates that?
Or the buffalo hat, or replica of that buffalo hat?
Yeah. Just curious.
Yes and no. Primarily in stickers say stolen election and. But not directly in this collection. We tried to keep it clean, we did try to keep it objective. Mm-hmm.
There are
the
definitely
filter was on.
There's good both sides, so to speak, representation in the collection. There's some good swag from either party that you get to enjoy, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the inauguration. So, kind of a last question: what becomes of this amazing collection? Where does it go next after you are no longer the steward?
A great question. I don't know. I do know that my wife Deb and I. Consider it much like me, a walking, talking nonprofit that should be donated somewhere that can keep it right. But right now, I'm trying to figure out how to store it in the wintertime.
I could see the Smithsonian being interested in that, in that collection.
There's really, really cool stuff in there. It is good. And I think I have a couple things at home I should probably pass on to you, for sure. Yeah.
We'd appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we are getting to the end here. Do we know what is happening next week here on the Brown Briefly?
Is next week the Truman Show?
The Truman Show? I love the Truman Show.
I've heard of the Truman Show, and you don't want to miss it.
Yes, the Truman Show is a good one.
Yeah, I see Gib going, what?
Yeah.
What?
Randomly hear our random thoughts on whatever is randomly happening.
Well, the Truman Show is one where we don't have an informed guest like we have today. and instead, we have to generate it all ourselves.
We have uninformed briefly.
Uninformed briefly instead, which is pretty interesting.
It's the audio version of what will be happening tonight.
There you go.
The Voice of Vashon fundraiser, Voice at 7 o'clock at the Vashon Theater. Come on down and support the Voice of Vashon. All right.
That is the movie theater, by the
way.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Come on down to the movie theater. All right. So for Gib, Bruce, Truman, Craig, Kevin, I am Amy, wishing you a fond farewell for the week. Please come on back next week for more quote-unquote intelligent discussion on the Truman Show of current happenings on and about Vashon.